Friends, we're definitely going to bring you up to date on what was not only the topic of the week, it's been the topic of the year, it's been a topic of tremendous interest, if not controversy, for many the long year. I think most of us will know that as we approach St. Patrick's Day, each and every year. We're always looking forward to the great day itself. It is, the oldest, biggest, largest parade in the world, bar none. It is so much a part of the Irish-American fabric that, friends, St. Patrick's Day is a day of great celebration. Focus on New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade in particular, but it also brings with it its controversy. For as far back as I can remember, there was always some kind of controversy that surrounded St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York. Let's go to Quinnipiac University, friends, and to Dr. John Leahy, who is president of Quinnipiac University. He's also, of course, founder of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, Museum an Gcarta Mór, which is the home of the world's largest collection of visual arts, artifacts, and printed materials relating to the Irish famine. And also, friends, Quinnipiac University now hosts Ireland's Great Hunger Institute. So, Quinnipiac, the men, before we get into your other major role in life, Dr. John Leahy. John, you're very welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Adrian. It's always great to talk with you.
This week is one to remember, but I would like to address you in your capacity as the vice chairman of the St. Patrick's Day Parade Committee, New York St. Patrick's Day Parade Committee, and just back up a little bit from there to a time of your own selection as Grand Marshal of this parade, and your reaction and your response to that.
Well, you're right, Jude. Thanks for remembering, Adrian. It's been a while.
17
years. I was the Grand Marshal in 1997, and of course that was the year that we were all both here in the United States and as well in Ireland commemorating the 150th anniversary of the famine of the Great Hunger, as we call it now, the worst year of the Great Hunger being 1847, so-called Black 47. So I made the theme of that year's parade the Great Hunger, and there were a lot of activities going on in Ireland and in New York and elsewhere in terms of adding the Great Hunger to the curriculum for our school children, and we were dedicating some memorials, and there was some artwork being generated to remember that dark and difficult period in Ireland's history. And so I was thrilled that the happened to be selected as the Grand Marshal, and I had just the year before read Christine Keneally's book, This Great Calamity, which for me was a kind of intellectual awakening about the Great Hunger. I sort of grew up in the Bronx, in the Riverdale section of the Bronx in New York, an Irish neighborhood where pretty much, I guess I learned about the famine like everyone else, that it was just a dark period there in Ireland, and that the Irish were somewhat to blame for it because they got overly dependent on a single crop and so on. I really didn't know until I had read Christine's book, the details and the extent to which the Irish were forced into their dependency on a single crop, and also the extent to which there was during that period, plenty of other non-potato food and
right.
livestock that could have been used by the ruling British government, who was in charge of Ireland during that time, to feed the starving Irish. And the more I read her book, in addition to being intellectually awakened, I just my anger continued to rise. That you know, this was the first time I realized in my life that this was an avoidable tragedy. I mean, the crop failed in successive years, and there would have been some suffering and some death, but what Christine so correctly called this great calamity did not have to happen, with over 1.5 million people dying, men, women, and children, over 2 million just in a 10-year period, leaving Ireland for America and elsewhere. So that was very important. I just thought that since I was given a platform as the Grand Marshal the following year, that I would use that year to communicate to as many people as possible what I had learned and from Christine's book. And from there, it just took off. You know, a lot of people, you were kind enough to interview me after the parade that day on your program, and a trustee by the name of Murray Lender, a trustee at Quinnipiac University, heard my speeches and thought the story was so compelling that it was really he who convinced me subsequently that we ought to do something at Quinnipiac University to keep alive the message and the educational process about the Great Hunger. And thanks to his generosity and real insistence that I do something, you know, we dedicated initially a small Lender family special collection room on Guttermore in our new library that we dedicated a couple of years later. And then from that room, as you know, we continue to acquire art thanks to Murray and his brother Marvin's generosity, and then dedicated just, it'll be 2 years, I guess, the next month, the opening of a museum on Guttermore, Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University, that now has attracted over 17,000 visitors, and as you said, it contains now the largest collection of art and educational materials related to the Great Hunger. So you just never know. I credit Christine, and I'm happy to say at the time Christine Keneally, I think she was still in Ireland teaching. She subsequently went to Drew University in New Jersey, and as of last year I was able to attract her to Quinnipiac University, and where she's now professor of Irish Studies, and she's the director of our, as you mentioned, the Great Hunger Institute, which will complement the museum by having research and intellectual activities, conferences, publications, and so on that Christine will lead. So it's really come full circle. I always believed in the power of an idea, but I read Christine's book back in 1996. It had just come out, and from that reading and then just the chance that I was elected Grand Marshal, and then my taking that message and about the Great Hunger, and then finally having Christine on our faculty now at Quinnipiac is very, very gratifying to me, and I feel confident that not only for the long term will we have a museum that will educate people, but we'll have an academic institute at Quinnipiac, a university that will continue research on the Great Hunger.
And we're all very happy and indeed delighted that Christine, that, as you say, everything has come the full circle. Let me just ask you, as the time, at that particular time, you probably had made your decision with respect to what the theme would be. But many would have said, wait a minute, you know, Northern Ireland is a mess. The political situation is today, and why don't we continue the pressure and the involvement of Irish America into Northern Ireland and put that dark part of our history to one side? It's too new, it's too raw. It's 150 years, great. Let's move on. Was there some of that, did some people feel that, okay, less said the better about that, because that's a kind of a part of our history that we definitely wouldn't want to dwell on too much?
No, there were quite a number. As you well remember, during that period, there were, I won't name them, but there were some people who were part of the parade itself and told me to suggested that I tone down the comments on the famine. So I did get a few people who offered discouraging remarks and comments about that, and certainly when I was announced, the British representative in Ireland took a couple of shots at me. And but you know, for me, and you remember the time very well. Governor Pataki was very strong during that time, and, and it was under his leadership that we really were able to get the Great Hunger Curriculum added to the schools in New York. And so there were some strong political leaders out there that that gave me encouragement to talk about this. But I'll tell you the other reason why I thought it was important, and you know, in the I've read since then more and more about the history of Ireland, and what's going on in Northern Ireland that hopefully is on a path for peace and unity, thanks to the Good Friday Agreement. It really, you have to go back. You can't understand Northern Ireland unless you understand the famine and the Great Hunger. And the period before that, when the Irish in large numbers were forced out of the northeast of Ireland and forced to the west of Ireland, under Cromwell and his followers, and
to hell are the Connachts, says he.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's the Great Hunger, really, for Irish Americans, no matter what your interest is in Ireland, all the way up to and including the present day issues. It really goes back to the misrule of the British government and. For you know, the better part of you know, going back to Henry VIII and his daughter Elizabeth I, and in the 16th century, and so the struggles and the problems of Northern Ireland were really created centuries early, and the famine, you know, for good or ill, Adrian, it's the most important piece of Irish history, and really, you know, it kept its economy from you know, missing most of the Industrial Revolution. They've almost went from an agrarian society to the electronic age. And so it's so important a piece of Irish history to explain all these things that I was not concerned that putting it behind it. And the other thing I felt strongly about, and this again I have to Christine Keneally for helping educate me, but the other problem with the Great Hunger is the story, up until Christine's book, really, and subsequent scholars, the story had actually been mistold and had been whitewashed. The numbers had been played down in terms of the death and migration, the responsibility of the British ruling government at the time was played down, and it was, you know, again, the historians at the time and in subsequent years clearly wrote the history from the British perspective. And so I felt even more strongly that while it might have been an event that occurred 150 years ago, it had not until Christine's book around 1996-97 did the real truth about the Great Hunger begin to get out. So I felt it was very important to balance that scale, and I'm thankful, as I said, for Christine and for the opportunity that the parade gave me, and then I'm eternally grateful to Murray Lenda for his financial support, without which all that might have ended in
1997. We are coming to the 254th anniversary of the St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York, and indeed the 250th anniversary was second to none. And also had a strong Quinnipiac University connection in the book, which was edited by Lynn Bushnell, vice president at the university, and of course compiled with John Ridge, historian supremo. That gave us also a great focus, and to many, still is a great visual of the history of the parade and what it actually means and what it has meant to us. That didn't take away from the fact, mind you, that as I mentioned at the introduction of the program here, controversy of one kind or another has always kind of been there. And be very careful how you react to this, being in media myself. But it's a great opportunity for media in general to spice up the occasion, the event, by pointing out some issues that are a source of aggravation. Sometimes they go out of their way, it appears anyway, to put a ripple, to actually suss out a sense of a definition of what this parade is. Is it an Irish parade? Is it a Catholic parade? What is it? And you as vice chairman, had to feel, as we all felt, this latest parade this year, March 17th, turned out to be a huge embarrassment, among other things, to a great number of well-meaning people who finally said, we didn't do anything to deserve this. Why would some of the most major sponsors who we have relied upon, why would they all yank out their support for this? And wait a minute, you know, this is new. This is now bringing an issue, and the issue being blocking of the gay community groups. That became something that hit some people like a wet Wellington in the face. Did that have to come sooner or later, John Leahy?
Well, I think the the parade takes place in New York City, so New York City is always a place where there's controversy and so we shouldn't be entirely surprised by that. But I would say you're right that I've been involved with the parade for over 30 years, and for the better part of almost 25 years, we've had a controversy surrounding whether gay and lesbian groups could march in the parade. And you know, our position has been the parade's position consistently, which I supported, that the primary purpose of the St. Patrick's Day parade is to celebrate being Irish, to celebrate being Irish American, and to celebrate the life of St. Patrick, who is the patron saint of Ireland and the patron saint of the Archdiocese of New York. And you mentioned the history book that Quinnipiac University Press, under Lynn Bushnell's leadership, was produced a few years ago. If the parade is just not a parade of people marching, that's really the 250 years of the parade, now up to the 253rd year this year, is a history of the Irish in New York. And it's the history of the relationship between the Irish in America and in Ireland. And so there's no question that that's the most important reason why the parade exists. And, of course, the parade is just one event during that activity. The most important event is the Mass that is celebrated in St. Patrick's Cathedral, 8:30 before we march. And but we certainly have struggled, I admit, over the last 20-something years in communicating that message because of the controversy surrounding the gays and lesbians. And as it also hurt all of us, really, that the parade, and I can say this with full knowledge and confidence, Adrian, The parade has never discriminated against any individual marching in the parade on the basis of race or ethnicity or religion or gender or sexual orientation. I have no doubt, and I know hundreds, and I'm sure there are thousands of gays, lesbians, and bisexual and transgender people who are marching in that parade each and every year. And but we weren't able to communicate that effectively because the what was thrown back at us, unless you have a self-identified gay and lesbian organization who are marching under their own banner that identifies them, gay and lesbian, then you can't prove to the world that you don't discriminate against individual gay and lesbians and so on. So I think for my hope is that that the action and the announcement I made Wednesday night that out at NBC Universal, a gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender group that will be marching in the parade in 2015, my hope is that puts aside the criticism that's been there unfairly, in my view, for the past 20-plus years, that we have discriminated against the people for their sexual orientation. And my hope is that in taking the action that we've taken, that we'll be able to more effectively continue to state, as we have in the past, that we don't discriminate against anyone marching in the parade in terms of their sexual orientation or any of these other characteristics that I mentioned. And I hope that, therefore, we can get back to communicating our primary message, and that is the parade on that day is an inclusive parade, but it's inclusive to celebrate being Irish, being Irish-American, the strong bond between Ireland and the United States, and in particular New York, and celebrate St. Patrick. I mean, the reason the parade is called the St. Patrick's Day Parade is, you know, St. Patrick was a real person who brought Christianity to Ireland and is the patron saint of Ireland and, of course, the Archdiocese of New York. And that's where I hope the focus is going forward. So there'll probably be new controversies. Again, as I said, it is New York, and we certainly understand that. But I do hope that this will at least put to rest those unfair charges that we have in the past discriminated against individuals, and that we'll be allowed to more effectively communicate what the real purpose of this parade is, to celebrate the life of St. Patrick.
Absolutely. I think that the decision, and you know, you as vice chair, and obviously Brian Comerford, and many others, you know, will know that the converse was unthinkable. It would be naive to think that the situation could continue on, and that in fact great supporters, none better and bigger than Quinnipiac University. But when you had, you know, Guinness and Heineken and Ford Motor Company, and indeed, you know, the 2012 Grand Marshal, Frank Comerford, NBC Universal, being put in a position where not only could this not continue, but it would have been and was about to become the greatest political football of all times, that could actually threaten, and this is real, that could actually threaten the future of the parade.
Well, as I said, we certainly have experienced pressure over the last 25 years. You know, we are going back to, you know, Dinkins did not march in the parade. Many political leaders have not marched for the past 20 years. We have certainly had negative press coverage of this issue over the years. You're quite right, this past year is the first time that we had two of our advertisers for the television production pull their ads, Guinness and Heineken. We didn't have Since I'm the chair of the TV production and deal directly with all of our advertisers, I was not contacted by any others that indicated to me that they would be pulling their support, although Guinness and Heineken clearly indicated that they would not support Parade in the future unless we resolve this issue. But you're quite right. Advertisers don't like controversy at all. They're there they want to be part of a positive event that allows them to help them sell their products and more effectively. So controversy is something, no matter what the issue is, that advertisers try to avoid. I would also say, because some of the press has covered this, that I think, again, is somewhat unfair, the decision to admit out at NBC Universal, John Levy, the chairman of the parade, supported that decision. Mm-hmm. I would say the four people who were most involved, John Dunleavy, myself, John Fitzsimons, and Frank Comerford, three Johns and a Frank, if mm-hmm. you will, were all involved for the past 6 months, really soon after the parade ended last March, and we had the public information about Guinness and Heineken's. We had a meeting and began a process that started just around the first week of April that said we really need to get on a path that can resolve this issue. So I wouldn't say, I mean, some people have suggested it was just the pulling of the Guinness and Heineken's that forced our hand, and then we also had the mayor also, Mayor de Blasio did not march in the parade. I would say it was more the cumulative effect of all of these things over the past 20 years that, as I said, has really kept us from communicating what our main message is. And this was, I think, the best way for us to at least communicate what is in fact the truth. That is that we've never discriminated against any individuals from marching in the parade on the basis of sexual orientation. But John Dunleavy, I would say, I've read some of the press clippings and the people are using adjectives as to whether different people supported this enthusiastically or reluctantly. I'll allow the amateur psychologists out there to figure out what adjectives they think are appropriate. But I will say this, John Dunleavy, this would not have happened without John Dunleavy's leadership and support. He took the decision after a lot of activity during the past 6 months to a meeting of the board of the New York City St. Patrick's Day parade, and the decision was approved unanimously by that board. So the idea that there were some in the leadership of the parade that supported this and others did not is simply not accurate. And in particular, John Dunleavy, he's been the parade chairman. I've been proud to be his vice chairman for 20 or so years. I can tell you this would not have happened without his support. And I would also say, Cardinal Dolan, when we approached him to be the Grand Marshal, we indicated that, where we were headed on this issue. We hadn't made a decision yet, and he was supportive of doing whatever we felt was in the best interest of the parade to retain it as the great parade it is, celebrating the life of St. Patrick. So all of those things were an integral part of this coming together, and probably also, I would just say, timing was also important. It came to our attention that out at NBC Universal had some interest in marching in the parade. And they're not marching in the parade, for some protest reason. Mm-hmm. They were enthusiastic about wanting to march in the parade. They're a large group and obviously they're part of the NBC family that, televises our parade every year and Frank Comerford obviously was the key player in all of that. Right. John Dunleavy met with the president of that organization before he took the decision to the the full board for a vote of approval. So it was very much a team effort. I certainly played some role, but I didn't play any more or less role than John Fitzsimons or Frank Comerford, and I would say I know the difference. I'm a president. I know that I've been a vice president, and I know the difference. And vice presidents and vice chairmen can have their views and can have some influence, but ultimately the chair or the president is the one who makes the decision. And John Dunleavy is the chairman and CEO of the parade, and he ultimately made the decision and supported it.
And indeed, first of all, I'm delighted that that you have taken the time to dispel the notion that it was in spite of John Dunleavy and that John Dunleavy has been sidelined. There has never been a chairman, I can say without fear of being contradicted, then nobody has put more into the success of the St. Patrick's Day Parade other than John Dunleavy. He's done an amazing job, and I think he must have felt good to have, Cardinal Dolan in his acceptance speech as Grand Marshal for 2015 to say and to incorporate into his remarks that the inclusion and the admission, the inclusion of the gay community groups was a wise decision. Cardinal does not say that lightly, and in fact, he can expect, some of the groups who will want to make this to continue the political football playing. He's not exactly sitting there either. He had to not only accept that, but he had to approve of, if not directly, but to say that the decision that was made, first of all, wasn't his, but that it was a wise decision, says a lot right there. I mean, what can you do beyond that to show that this wasn't a renegade group or whatever? I think we have to look at that as well.
Well, I think without question, I think, again, for me, I hope one of the reasons why we wanted to take care of this earlier is to, I'm focused on, I'm just so thrilled that His Eminence will be the Grand Marshal of the parade. I mean, when you think of, as I said, we're trying to celebrate being Irish-American and celebrating the life of St. Patrick. Who better to represent all that than, the sitting Cardinal and His Eminence Timothy Cardinal Dolan. So I think I have nothing but great excitement and hope that with Cardinal Dolan being Grand Marshal, leading it, as we move beyond into the months ahead and begin doing the final preparation for the parade, that the focus clearly on the excitement. And he's such a beloved figure in New York, and that you're absolutely right. He's we couldn't be happier, and I don't think we could have a parade be more effective in its communication than to have His Eminence Timothy Cardinal Dolan being our Grand Marshal. So, but you're absolutely right. He was supportive of, as I said, whatever our decision was. He has confidence, and I will say, he knows John Dunleavy better than any of us, and he has
and
great confidence
John Dunleavy,
in John
Dunleavy. Yeah.
Absolutely, and he has great confidence in his leadership. Has great respect for him, and he knows John and hopefully the rest of us would never do anything that we didn't strongly feel was in the best interest of keeping this parade going and making sure that that the focus is always and primarily on the life of St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, the patron saint of the Archdiocese.
Yes. And I think also that many will feel that there is a new environment in Rome, and that definitely our current Pope Francis has actually, you know, he's opened up an area which might have been easier to avoid, and that is that inclusion is very much a part of, from Rome down, is something that nobody has to guess, well, how is this going to go over in Rome or whatever. It is, there's a sea change, and it is terrific, I think, and it will be remembered that the New York St. Patrick's Day Parade, under John Dunleavy's leadership, made the change, made that terrific step forward, and that again, the as we head into the now 254th St. Patrick's, New York St. Patrick's Day Parade, that will be something that we can all be proud of. But all of this happened, there are so many factors that happened, but definitely we're delighted with the selection of the Cardinal, and he definitely, let's say he's chuffed now, it might be an understatement, but he is delighted.
No, I think you're right. And the other thing, Adrian, that I've always felt, you know, for the past 20 years, this has not just been a divisive issue on a small scale or a public relations problem, but this issue has actually divided Irish America. It's divided,
absolutely.
You know, the Irish press, you know, the parts of the Irish government. So that I feel so strongly that the action that we've taken, and hopefully for future actions and parades in the future, I really think this is an opportunity to bring the Irish and Irish American community and all its elements together in a way that that of course the reason why the parade was started and has had such a rich and beautiful history, and so I do hope that it's not only going to be an inclusive parade that on the basis of you know, sexual orientation, but an inclusive parade in that people, you know, Irish and Irish Americans of all different views and beliefs, and the Irish media across the board, that we can all come together this year and in the years to come, and really together celebrate being Irish, being Irish American, the Irish have done for this country, and in particular New York, and what our Catholic faith and St. Patrick has been so central to our lives, both in Ireland and certainly here in New York. So I'm very optimistic, and you're absolutely right. I'm sure the Pope has been a very important person in terms of directing us correctly, when, as he indicated, you know, if someone is searching for the Lord and has goodwill, you know, who are we to judge? And I hope that, I'm sure that message is not coming from His Holiness, is an enormously powerful statement that applies to differences that sometimes divide us for a whole host of different reasons. So.
Also, you had mentioned the mayor's, we have a new mayor, and Mayor de Blasio, and his refusal, you know, to participate in the parade based on that one singular issue. But there are other pressures having nothing to do with the current issue, which still need to be resolved. You know, the shortening of the parade, the huge number of applicants, and those you know, who are entitled to make application and who feel that, you know, that for years they have wanted to join the parade and be part of the parade, and simply by, you know, the shortening of the parade, that they seem to be getting further away from the reality. There are many, many, many groups who feel, listen, we should be, you know, we're not in any controversial area here. We need to get into it. I'm sure that if all the applications and those who would like to be in St. Patrick's Day Parade, we need to lengthen the parade route and the parade itself if we were to accommodate. That's going to take some working out, right?
No, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you mentioned it, Adrian. But going back to Mayor de Blasio, he did, I sat with him in the first pew of the cathedral before last year's parade. So he was there at the cathedral for the beginning celebration of Mass. Yes. And while he didn't march, I'm pleased that he made some, I think, positive statements about our decision with respect to having NBC Universal, and I hope that he'll certainly come to the Mass again and hopefully march in the parade. But you're absolutely right. We've been under pressure when Mayor Bloomberg was in office and there were some new guidelines written to shorten the parade. It was actually shortened by a few blocks in terms of the northern end, but also restricting it to less than 6 hours, which we've gone over in years when we've had good weather and very popular grand marshals. So as I indicated on Wednesday night, we have not been encouraging applications from new groups for several years because we are under some pressure to shorten the parade. And I indicated Wednesday night that while people could still apply for the parade, the space was very tight, and I've had subsequent conversations with the parade leaders and directors, and while other groups can certainly apply and express their interest in future parades, I don't believe we will be adding any other groups to this year's parade. We think the one new group that we've added will be all that will be there for 2015, but we're certainly open to considering applications for 2016 and beyond. But you're right, we're going to have to see and continue to work on the size of the parade to make sure that we're following the guidelines that we've been given in terms of the permit to march on that day.
There is some reason indeed for early controversy in that your new public relations officer, Bill O'Reilly, is saying, yes, gays can apply, everybody can apply. And I think some of that may be brought to pressure by the other groups, by the groups who would feel, well, listen, we've been trying to get into that parade for 10 years, for 15, for 20 years, and a lot of new organizations who feel that they would like to be a part of it as well. When you're talking on a practical level, I think you've encapsulated where the problem is. And that is, hopefully, in this new atmosphere of inclusion, and definitely with the Cardinal as the Grand Marshal for the 2015 St. Patrick's Day Parade, there may be some wiggle room with respect to maybe getting some concessions either to get back to where we were before the Bloomberg era, or, you know, we're definitely going to be in a position of strength, considering that, let's go back to, this is the oldest and the largest parade in the world, bar none. So I think we're in a pretty good position there to move forward on that area as well. Have we lost John Leahy? Okay. All right. Yes, we've... let's see if we can reconnect with John Leahy. You're listening to Friends, Irish Radio Network, USA. This is the Flannelly Show. We're coming to you live from New York City. The issue at hand and the week that's in it is highlighting the tremendous issue of the week, which in fact, friends, is being resolved. And again, let's start with what the announcement is, and the announcement is that twofold. One, on the selection of the Grand Marshal, Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, and the major change in the parade committee is indeed in the chairman, John Dunleavy, our guest who we just lost temporarily on the phone.
I'm just back, Adrian, so we got disconnected.
Okay, bottom line on all of this is that we move forward, and again, what I was suggesting was that the St. Patrick's Day Parade Committee, by virtue of its significance, the oldest, the largest parade in the world, at the focus not only in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, but the St. Patrick, the patron saint of the Archdiocese of New York, maybe we can again approach a mayor, a new mayor, and maybe negotiate for some additional time or for something. That's not out of the question.
No, I certainly hope it's not, and I have every reason to believe that the mayor, who even though he was unhappy with some of our policies last year that prevented him
right.
from marching, he and his office and the police department were very supportive in giving us our permit to march and providing the resources that they do. And so I have every reason to believe he knows the importance of the parade for our community, and we certainly will work with him. And it's also a huge, as he well knows, a huge economic boom to the city. It's one of the largest sales tax collection days in every year, and the restaurants and the hotels and the people we're bringing from outside who stay for several days before and after the parade to attend shows in the museums in New York and so on. It's a very, very important economic development day that he certainly appreciates. And so I have every reason to think that certainly the most recent action that we've announced will only help in terms of our relations with the mayor. And but as I said, he was, even though he, on the basis of a principle, you know, decided not to march in the parade last year, he was there at the cathedral, and in every way, all the agencies and offices of the city that we work with couldn't have been more cooperative last year.
And that part is terrific. Also, when we think of the St. Patrick's Day Parade, anybody who has attended or who has been watching that and the tremendous coverage of NBC Universal would have to know that the direct connection and contact with Ireland on that day and around that day, the huge connection of Irish America in general, but of New York to Ireland is very evident. You have so many people who come to New York because that's the place to be. And, of course, you have Irish Americans flocking to Ireland to become part of, you know, the celebration of St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, which in my time was a holy day of obligation, and there was little or no recognition of the connection between St. Patrick and Ireland other than the religious significance of it. This has developed into a tremendous coordination and celebration that is specifically from New York to Ireland is second to none.
No, you're absolutely right. And, of course, we were delighted that Taoiseach was there last year, I think for the last 2 years, actually.
Yep.
And Irish officials have been there. And I also, at the press conference, had the great pleasure of meeting our new consul general. She just started her work, and so I hadn't met her before Wednesday. And I must also say, on going back to the out at NBC Universal, no consul general worked harder than to bring about a resolution of this issue than Noel Kilkenny. And I wish he would still been there. We have a great new consul general, and I'm sure Noel and Honora are thrilled to be in Greece in their new position. But he worked tirelessly to the very end, to the final days of his consul generalship here in New York, and he was very helpful to me personally, and I know was very helpful in terms of outreach to various members of the community with respect to this issue. And I'm so pleased Quinnipiac, by the way, we honored him last May at our commencement. Both he and Honora both received honorary doctorates of humane letters degrees from Quinnipiac University. So we're proud to have both Noel Kilkenny and Honora as honorary Quinnipiac alumni.
And I'm delighted that you mentioned that, because indeed, as you say yourself, right up to the point where he was leaving for the airport, he stuck with it and definitely has his contribution should be acknowledged. You know, the Taoiseach, who you mentioned as being in New York for St. Patrick's Day over the last couple of years, is also scheduled to come to Quinnipiac University in November, around the middle of November. Again, somebody who has an amazing interest in the Great Irish Hunger Museum and obviously the Ireland's Great Hunger Institute there. I'm sure that he also will be pleased, as the people of Ireland will be, that the parade can continue, to be the significant event week. You know, we've somehow managed, in no small part because of the St. Patrick's Day parade, to make it a St. Patrick's week and indeed the St. Patrick's month. And a lot of that has to do with the focus of St. Patrick's Day parade in New York. So it's a win-win for all. But I know that the Taoiseach, I'm sure, will be pleased and will mention that. But it's great that he has scheduled this time to get up to Ireland's Great Hunger Museum and to Quinnipiac University on this trip.
Well, we hope you can do that. You're making news for me. You're making my day. I know. We have. I have a hold on a couple of dates in November on his calendar. So I hope. I know he's very busy and he's got a lot of other engagements. But as you know, you were gracious enough to get us an audience with him in his office in Dublin last year. And we extended an invitation to him to come to the museum so we can give him a personal tour and actually to honor him with an honorary doctorate, a humane letters degree as well. And so I appreciate your help in trying to arrange this. And hopefully if everything works out on his schedule, we're very excited to have the Taoiseach visit Quinnipiac University and our Great Hunger Museum. And so I hope that does occur, but you're right. He's been a great supporter of the Great Hunger and the work that we've been doing, and we'll be truly honored if we can have him there at our museum sometime this year.
Okay. Well, he says he's coming, and he says he's coming in November. So
great.
Look forward to that as well.
Well, I want you to come as well, Adrian.
Oh yeah. I just want to make sure that not only does he go there, but that he spends some time, Quinnipiac and, of course, the Ireland's Great Hunger Museum is fantastic, and it is You know, we keep mentioning it every week here. It's a great place to visit. It's free. It is, the admission is free. And it is something that I think deserves the acknowledgement of the Irish government and the Taoiseach. And to that end, we'll move onward and celebrate that visit as well.
Well, that's great. Thanks, AJ. Again, I really appreciate your help in helping to arrange all that.
John Leahy, again, the work continues, and I know that most people may not know that with or without the controversy of this year and getting past, you know, the exclusion of the gay groups, and now that that has been resolved, St. Patrick's Day parade and the success of that is a year-long work for a great number of people within the Irish community, the Irish American community, and indeed from the support that comes from you know, the outside. This is not something that just happens to be you know, thrown together at the last minute or starts in February. It's a year-long effort by volunteers who do a great job, and that's not.
No, you're absolutely right. And again, no one does more work and puts in more time than our chairman, John Dunleavy. He's helped significantly by Hillary Byrne, Mike Castles, and others. He's got a team of people, and you're right; they're all volunteers. We just have a part-time secretary in the office that helps out, that's paid. But you're right; as you said, it's the largest, it's the best, it's the most visible and most watched parade anywhere in the world, and it's truly remarkable that it's been done throughout its history almost entirely by volunteers. And as I said, no one puts more of his heart and soul and time and effort than our chairman, John Dunleavy.
And his committee and those who've actually devoted their lives to making the New York St. Patrick's Day parade the success that it is. Thank you for joining us, Vice Chairman and President of Quinnipiac University, founder of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, and indeed Ireland's Great Hunger Institute. Good luck.
Thank you, Adrian.
And thanks for
having me. It's always great talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks again. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network USA. We will be heading to Ireland for news.